Some of you. Okay, good. So we can have an interesting discussion. Let's keep it interactive. It's a small group. You don't have to wait till the end. If you have any questions, just raise your hand. Just a little bit of brief background. My name is Ravi Mazumdar. Chirag Shah, whose name you see on the board outside, is not there. So I'm the VP of Engineering at Flexera Software. My background goes back to 1994, where I started with the company InstallShield, the first job of my career. Stuck around, since then. So I've known the products, used the products for a while. I've played multiple roles, including QA, and now I manage the engineering teams. So before we start, jumping into the actual, presentation, let's talk about a little bit about the technology trends that have been happening in the, the software world. First of all, agile application development. This is something that most of you, I think, are familiar with. It's a term that's used wide. The key thing in agile application development is the fact that teams are distributed globally right now. Software development teams are no longer located in one location. They're not working out of a single office. They're spread across the globe. Products are becoming more component-based. And there are two aspects to this. One is end-tier applications that are component-based, as well as products themselves that are, that could be developed and sold as suites. So in that way, products are all becoming component-based. And iterative development. I'm sure you guys have heard about terms like Scrum, Agile, and so on. And iterative development has become not a nice thing, but a necessity. People are releasing products very frequently. They are no longer going through long release cycles of a year and a half or 2 years. They want to get products out to the market, maybe once a quarter or something like that, which means that frequent releases are very important. In addition to, the development processes, there are some new and advanced Microsoft platforms that have been released. One is 64-bit Windows. This machine that I'm running is 64-bit Windows. Many of the non-technical staff in my company back in the US are running 64-bit Windows. They don't even know that they're running 64-bit Windows, which means that 64-bit Windows has actually become a reality now. Nobody even knows that it's 64-bit. And application virtualization. This is a new concept. Probably familiar to some of you, probably not familiar, which we'll talk a little bit about later on. So my whole talk today is about how changes in application development processes and the dynamics of a team and then the new and advanced Microsoft platforms is affecting installation development and how, as a company, we are stepping up to those needs. So let's talk a little bit about the changing nature of installation development. We talked about application development itself changing. Now let's see how it's affecting the nature of developing installers. So teams are distributed globally, we know that, which creates the need that the installation development is also decentralized. No longer is it possible that one build engineer or setup engineer be located somewhere and be responsible for the creation of the installer, which is for a product which is coming, which input comes from all over the globe. So you could have teams in the US, you could have teams in Europe, you could have teams in Asia, all contributing towards the code for a single product. And it's, because of so many engineers in so many different places, it's becoming very difficult for one setup engineer to be able to maintain that code and efficiently manage the installation process. So basically, the facts are, installation development has to be decentralized, which means that multiple users need to be working on a single product installations, and which means that, the need to create multiple installation units in different places and all of them put together to create a single product installer. So that's a need or a necessity that's become real now. Second, we talked about component-based architecture. And here, you know, we'll specifically talk more about the fact that products are becoming component-based, which means that, you know, product A is one component, product B is another component. Companies would want to put those together to form a product suite. So that's become a very important thing. So because there's a need to create suite installations, and Microsoft Office is a good example. I mean, Office consists of Word, Excel, PowerPoint. It is sold as a suite right now, but you know, depending on needs, you know, one may decide to split it up. Sell Word as one product, you know, sell Excel as one product, and then mix and match student editions versus small business editions versus professional editions. I mean, so and it, all these are basic necessities for easy ability to create suite installations, which means multiple installations, again, combined into a single product suite, manage individual components of a suite installation. So these are the needs that are being driven by the fact that products are becoming more componentized. We talked about iterative development. Iterative development is the fact, you know, that we come out with frequent and regular product releases, which means that from an installation perspective, you need to have frequent product builds and releases of the installer as well. I mean, it's not just the code that is being shipped, it's the installer that get built, that's get, you know, that gets built on a regular basis, on a daily basis, so that QA can test it, you know, install it and test it. So build automation on build farms. You know, if a product, especially in the case of a suite installer, if your suite consists of multiple products, you'd want the the builds or the installer builds to happen on multiple machines. So you want to save time there. So that's become a need. And manage and optimize daily installer builds. So jumping into decentralized installation development. What we're doing, you know, from an install shield perspective is created a concept, we've created a concept called installation unit, which is feature sized, lets you do pretty much anything you want in terms of creating an installer, like files, shortcuts, registry, and many of the advanced features as well, and create a unit out of that. And then dynamically or statically link that to a parent installer project. So let's say there are, you know, five teams in five different locations creating the code for a single product. It is possible that these five teams create five different installation units. There might be one assigned setup or release engineer who would be working on a parent project whose responsibility would solely be, you know, hey, I need to install all the contents of these five teams. So all that I'll do is basically create a project, and I don't know what these units are being, you know, what these units contain, but I know that as long as I link to those units, I'll be able to install everything that is required for the project. And what that setup engineer will control is the basic UI of the project, on how the flow of the dialogues go, and then the name of the product, etc. So, and there are two ways to do it. You can statically import all the data if it's a one-off thing. If there's an engineering team who's just said, hey, you know, here's something that I created. I'm not going to change it anymore. Consume these in your project. So the setup engineer has a way to statically import all that data. And after that, that unit is sort of useless. A dynamic link is what we expect people to more commonly use, which is I have a project and I'm linking to your installation unit. You can make changes to it on a regular basis. And then whatever changes that you have checked in on a nightly basis, when I do the parent install, all those changes will get into the installation. allows for the reuse of functional units. So if I'm a if my team is creating an installation unit, I could share it with product one. I could also potentially share it with product two if it's a shared component. Typical examples are maybe a reporting infrastructure that could be shared between multiple products within a company. And what we've also done in this feature is basically simplified the back-end project structure in a simplified XML representation, much less complicated than what we had before. So this allows for easier to control your changes in source control. I mean, if you checked into source control, branching and so on. So let's jump to a demo of installation units. So this is the Install Shield IDE. If I get my mouse to work without the mouse. So let's create a new project. We have a new project type here called Installation Unit. I'm going to call it Unit 1. And as you can see, it's got pretty much all the features. For those familiar with Install Shield, it's got pretty much all the features that are possible in a regular installation project. So we'll go ahead and let's check. Yeah, its name is Unit 1. Let's go ahead and add a file. We will create a shortcut. And you can create any number of things. You can create a registry entry. You can make changes to XML files. If you are creating a web server component, you can make changes to IIS settings, run SQL scripts if this is a database component, add custom actions, dialogues, etc. So all I'm going to do is just save it, and I'm not going to check it into SourceSafe, but just assume that this has now been checked into whatever source control system that your company is using. I'll go ahead and create another installation unit, call it Unit 2. And I'll do the same thing here. I'll go ahead and add a file. Go ahead and create a shortcut. Call the shortcut Unit 2. Oops. And here what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually also add a dialog. So there'll be times when, let's say you're installing, you're creating a unit for a database component. You might want them to point to the location of the database server, and that requires some special input that's not available in the main installation UI. So you can create a dialog here. Keep it simple, I'm just going to add a push button. And just call it press me. You can set the behavior just like you edit the dialogues in a regular install shield project. You could do all that here. And then what I'm going to do here is I'll go to the general information, and I'm actually going to add some comments here. This is a way for the installation unit developer to communicate with the setup engineer who is going to consume this installation unit to do anything special if required. So here I'll say that I have a dialogue in this unit that needs to be sequenced. So I did that and then saved it. So assume that this has been checked into source control system as well. So now here I am, the setup developer, the parent product setup developer, and I'm using a regular MSI type of installer for this. Let's call it my product. And in there, what I can do is I can add files, I can do whatever. But here what I'm doing is, all I'm saying is all my data is in installation units, so therefore I'll create a feature, and then I will just go ahead and add the installation units. So add unit one. And unit two. And if you notice, under instructions for unit two, it clearly says, there's a dialogue in that unit that needs to be sequenced. So while the setup developer is in this view related to this particular unit, he or she can go and then sequence it wherever they want. I can just say, I just want it after install welcome. And it just drops in. So that way, you could have dialogues, you could have custom actions if you want, defined in the installation unit that can be sequenced. And then at this point, all that the setup developer has to do is just build the project, and they should be in here. Oh, okay. All I need to do is add it to a particular feature and hit the build, and these, whatever files, whatever resources are included in the installation unit are, all consumed, all brought into this product setup. So this feature is in development right now. So I am not going to, run this setup and show you what it did, because, there are some issues around it. But again, this is one of our, key features targeted for an upcoming release later this year. Any questions so far? Yes. Now, yes, you have to sequence custom actions also for the units.
And like variables, pods, about naming conflicts.
It'll manage conflicts. If there are any conflicts with related to properties or something, you will get a dialog that says which one do you want to keep. And you could keep the one in the installation unit, the one in the parent project, whatever you want. So, suite installations. Again, we talked about what suites are. A very good example is Microsoft Office. Another example is Adobe Creative Suite, where Acrobat Reader may be combined into sold as its own, but combined with other products and, bundled up as a suite. So what we have done is basically created a new project type in addition to the installation unit, and we're calling it the Suite project. Again, this project format is also now XML-based, so that's easier to edit. It's easier to manage in source control, and it clearly lays out the flow of what is included in a suite and what UI needs to be displayed, etc. Seamless integrated suite installation progress. So even if you have MSIs, EXEs, patches applied to certain MSIs, the suite installer or the bootstrapper that we call it manages the progress, so it is seamless across all of them. Conditionally install component setups. You could check for some conditions before installing, let's say if you included Adobe Acrobat in your suite. You could put a condition to see if Acrobat is already on the machine. And if that is on the machine, you could install it. And because we allow these individual setups to be downloaded from URLs rather than included in the executable, you're going to save a lot of time here in the installation of these suites. Support for MSI properties and command line switches. So you could set command line switches to run setups, obviously in silent mode if they're, MSI, etc. Order setups in the suite sequence. Let's say Acrobat as the first install, and then something else as later, the main product as the later one, etc. Extensible, customizable UI. It's got a dialog editor, a separate dialog editor, with a much more newer UI look and feel, which is we are modeling the Windows 7 Aero style dialogs, and it comes with its own dialog editor, so you can create whatever dialogs you want. You can add billboards, etc. Because generally suite installs tend to be long. You can captivate the user with things like billboards and play flash files, etc. And the last but not the least is the option to create a single ARP entry for all components of a suite. So let's say you've got Adobe Acrobat and a couple of your own products. You don't have to create three or four different ARP entries on the Windows box. You can just combine them all into one ARP entry so that you can just install and remove the suite all by itself and do maintenance, repair, etc., all on the entire suite. So, demo of a suite installer. Now, this one's going to be a much shorter demo because this is work in progress, but I'll show you what its capabilities are so that you can understand how it will benefit you, and then once we go once we announce a beta, you're more than free to participate in that beta and provide feedback if this is a feature that would be of value to you. So as you can see, there's a new project type called Suite Project. We'll call it Product Suite. It's fairly simple. Basically, it allows you to do is specify the pieces of your suite. You can have a package that is in the form of an MSI, a patch file, or an EXE. You could add a transaction, an MSI transaction that was introduced, I believe, in Windows Installer 4.5 allows you to basically specify multiple, MSIs or MSPs as a part of a single install. So it's a little more advanced form of what was earlier called chained setups, where you could do one after the other. So add an MSI. So basically what this allows you to do is specify all its details here. Right now, you have to, you know, get the package ID, you know, display name, and so on. In a more, you know, what our goal is to be able to, for you to just browse to the MSI, and then we should be able to just pick up all this information from that, rather than you having to go and, you know, copy and paste from different locations. But at this time, you know, the UI is not advanced enough so that, you know, I could go browse to that MSI and point to it. Add an EXE. I could even add multiple packages to this transaction. Basically, change the order, if you want, of how these things get executed and installed. And as I pointed out, extensive, you know, a fully comprehensive dialog editor to make changes to these dialogs, because this will be the new UI for the product suite and not the individual MSI UI. So it'll be of importance to, you know, make sure this UI is good. Hit save and build, and it should build you a suite installer that, you know, has capabilities of installing all your component products as one single suite. Questions? So, just an example. So, this is the form that the suite project is actually stored in. Both during design time, as well during runtime. So, this is what, whenever you make changes in the suite project in the IDE, the changes are written to an XML that is of this format. So as you can see, it's fairly, you know, easy to understand. It, you know, talks about the mode, install mode, talks about the UI panels. Then it talks about what are called parcels, which are basically packages that form your product suite. And, you know, it has the ability to specify this, I believe, is the product ID. You can put in a you know, something to check for the existence of the product. Maybe it's a registry key or, you know, some other thing. And based on that, make a decision to install or not install. And as you can see, it can actually download the EXE or an MSI from a website. So your initial install in a suite install would be a really small executable, probably, you know, somewhere in the range of maybe a few megs, and then after that, you know, all that comes down is basically an executable with this manifest that is embedded inside of it, and then once it executes locally, then it knows what to get. You also have the option of including everything in that EXE if you want to, but that's, you know, it's up to you. So you have the flexibility now to have all this capabilities. So frequent product builds. I mean, this is something that, you know, that's a reality. Everybody's building daily builds of not only the code, but the installer as well. So developers basically use a development environment like Visual Studio to build their code. So for the installer, you use the Install Shield IDE. Check it into a source control system. And then do daily builds, you know, automated daily builds using build tools, build scripts, and from an installer perspective, use the Install Shield standalone build. So just some information that we gathered from our customers and, you know, and generally in industry on what it takes to manage daily builds. So you all know that the typical process involved is retrieve the source files, do the pre-build process, compile the application binaries, and then build the installation. So what was of interest to us is how much time was allocated to each of these different stages of an automated build process. So retrieving the source files, approximately 15% of overall build time. Compiling the core application binaries, about 60%. And then building the installer was about 25%. So while not significant, it's not also, you know, insignificant. 25% is a decent amount of time that you would like to optimize. So in the case that you have multiple installers, use the standalone build, use build farms, you know, span it out, and you know, take advantage of the standalone build. You don't need the complete IDE or the install shield product installed on a machine to take advantage of optimizing and fully automating your installations. So just a little bit on standalone build. This has been around, you know, for a while, and it is easy to get on a clean build machine. It can be integrated into source control systems. It's essentially one large folder that you can just put into your source control system and get latest simply by using Xcopy, because, you know, it really doesn't do much in terms of installation, except that it checks it. All it requires is some core Visual C++ runtime, which I'm sure most build machines already have, because you are compiling your own application binaries on it. Take advantage of build farms, multiple machines, component installers in multiple machines. That's how you utilize build farms. Standalone build is available as a separate product. So once you have, let's say you have one copy of the IDE for one developer, and you'd like the installer to be built on a build farm that's more than one machine, maybe five machines, you can easily buy multiple copies of the standalone build, and easily, you know, you can take advantage of one of our licensing models, which is concurrent licensing, which doesn't require every machine to have its own copy of the install shield, whether it's standalone build or IDE. You can just buy a concurrent license that says, hey, you know, enable this to be run on three separate build machines at a time. And even though you have six, what this will do is it allows you to run three at any point of time. So that's a, you know, it's a very good feature that you can take advantage of, especially in standalone build. So we talked a, you know, a lot about, you know, development processes and how the agile development process, the fact that teams are globally distributed, the fact that products are more componentized, and the fact that, you know, iterative development and, you know, requires, you know, frequent product releases. So we're just, you know, trying to put it all together. So basically, the recommendation is take advantage of installation units. Developers create individual installation units for their component that needs to be installed. A parent setup developer creates the installation project for the product, in which each of these units are linked and consumed. Build this on a daily basis to get the product installer out. And using this similar process, build the installers for product 2, product 3, and product 4. So then utilize the install shield suite project to put them all together and build a suite installer. So this is, you know, what are, you know, the theme and the goal around our next release of Install Shield is based around, based on. Any questions before I jump on to the platform support? So we talked about development processes, how that's affecting the development of installers. Now we'll talk about how new and advanced platforms, specifically focused around 64-bit and application virtualization, and how that is affecting installation development. So why 64-bit? As I mentioned before, Windows 7 64-bit is mainstream. This machine is a 64-bit machine. If I gave it to my wife, she wouldn't even know it's 64-bit, and she'd just use it as any other machine. Windows Server 2008 R2 is available only in 64-bit. There are no 32-bit versions of that. And it's highly likely that if Microsoft comes out with Windows 8, who knows? They may just ship it in 64-bit only. It is possible. I mean, can't say anything for sure, but that's a possibility. So that's why 64-bit computing is important, and 64-bit support is important in your product as well as in your installers to be able to handle the nuances and the requirements of 64-bit platforms. So the functionality that we've had, I mean, this is not new to us. At InstallShield, we've had core 64-bit functionality for a while now. We've supported Windows 64 even on the Itanium machines way back when it was released. So as far as I recall, we've been supporting it since 2004. The ability to target 64-bit folders, 64-bit registry, and other core 64-bit platform features. Recent functionality that we've added that would be useful is the ability to extract COM information for 64-bit files. And in Windows Installer, it's not recommended that you self-register files and you extract that COM information and populate certain MSI tables to properly handle the Windows Installer rules. And this is something that we've added. I think it was in Install Shield 2010 where you could extract COM information from 64-bit files. Custom action support, including calling functions from 64-bit MSI DLLs, as well as 64-bit managed code custom actions. What is going to be coming shortly is the ability to do 64-bit dependency scanning. So if you have 64-bit files, we could do static dependency scanning on it and figure out the dependencies, add the appropriate merge modules or other runtime support if required. And using our suite installer, the ability to create a single installer that would handle both 32 and 64-bit Windows. So, any questions on 64-bit? I don't necessarily have a demo around 64-bit is because the functionality has been there for a while, and what we are adding is something that's under the hoods more than something I can show in the UI. So we're going to talk about application virtualization briefly. So how many of you know what application virtualization is? Good. So for those who don't know, application virtualization, specifically Microsoft's application virtualization technology called AppV, is the ability to take an application and make it run on a machine without installing it. So from an MSI-based installer that has 150 files that are a part of the product, what you end up creating is a couple of files that basically form the application that then uses a runtime engine on the machine called the AppV client. And what that does is when this AppV package, as it is called, is given to the AppV client, it just it brings up a virtual OS around the application, and it's called a bubble, in simplified terms, and runs the application without doing any installs, or without making any changes to the base operating system, except if the application itself is creating things like documents and so on, that is the only time it would actually write something out to the base OS. But in most other cases, it doesn't do anything with the base OS. So that is the concept behind application virtualization. Again, a part of Microsoft's TCO movement to reduce the total cost of ownership in an enterprise. Right now, it is very common in enterprises where products are distributed. It is common in line of business applications that are being developed within an enterprise rather than ISV-based products that are sold. So we talked about it. It's click to run without installing the application. Eliminate application conflicts, so you will rarely have two applications that will have conflicts between each other because they're both running in their own individual bubbles, and there is no conflict of one file not being there versus another file. So the complete elimination of the DLL hell idea. Does not impact the OS, and hence the machine in an image state. So if you have an imaged machine in your corporate environment and you run a virtual app on it and you shut it down, there are no changes that are made to the base OS. There's the capability to stream apps to the desktop. And this is specifically useful when you have a very comprehensive desktop thick client product where it's not very common for everyone to be using all functionality. You have the capability of splitting your application and then putting a core piece of functionality that comes down on the machine right away and then have the rest of it sit on the server and only come down if a user has initiated that. So for example, I might have a menu items that's five levels deep that I may rarely use, but at some point of time, if I go and try to click on that, and at that point of time, the rest of the application content streams into the local machine and automatically is initiated. And it's ideal, as I mentioned, it's ideal for line of business applications in an enterprise. And this is primarily today, it's important because the AppV client is not freely redistributable by Microsoft. It's available as a form in the form of a MDOP kit, which is Microsoft's desktop optimization kit. It is sold to enterprises. So it's not very easy for ISVs to build an AppV package because there is no, guarantee that the AppV client will be on the machine. And unlike the MSI engine, you won't be able to ship it as a part of your install or a part of your media. That's not possible today. So AppV support and install shield. So this has been there for a while. I believe the first time that we added AppV support was in install shield 2010. Build the best thing is you can build both an MSI for your product and an AppV package because both of them are working from a single project. No sequencing or capture required. So traditionally, outside of the install shield tool, if you were to create an AppV package, what you would typically do is build an installer and then take a tool from Microsoft called the sequencer, which is basically capturing what the install does by monitoring the installation, and then based on that, it would create the AppV package. So let's say you're doing daily builds and your product is changing on a daily basis. So each time you build an MSI, you have to take it, you have to sequence it, and build a separate AppV package. Using Install Shield, it's all stored, all the information is stored in the project file. And using that information, it builds an MSI as well as an AppV package, so you don't have to do this extra step of sequencing. As I said, because of that,
If you create a stream, you also record the part of settings you do in the system?
App settings?
When you create this thing, you just install, so you also record the location where you install the application, or other things you do with the installation.
Right, so. So we don't. So we don't capture it. So what we do is we take all the information that's available inside of an MSI, which, you know, we figure out, you know, where the MSI installs the product using installdir. We take that information and use that to build the API package. Yeah, you can, in fact, I'll walk you through a demo where you can basically specify the target OS of your installer. Is it the target OS or was it the folder to where it gets installed? Is that your concern?
In a setup, you can have a lot of questions which will make a difference in what is installed or is available after installation.
Right, so the difference between the install and the API package is that with the API package, you're really not concerned where it gets installed. There is no installation. So you're really not worried about where the package goes to or where the files go to. All that you know is that there is a folder structure, a logical root folder, which is your installdir, and there is a folder structure under that, which is maintained when you run the virtual package. So there is no option of installing here or there because there is really no install.
The different questions you have in the setup, are there, like you give a normal installation pathway, you install your application, but if you specify a folder like where you want to store some data.
Okay. Okay. Right. So for those, yes, you're right. For let's say your documents folder or something like that, it would basically take a hard-coded path and then create it there. So you would have specified the default for it anyway, right? In your MSI package, you would say my documents, my application. So it would take that and it would create it in that location. There's no way of customizing it afterwards. You could, again, like I said, to enable that, the recommended step is to sequence it, which is capture it. But then if you capture it, that was your choice. But how can you predict another end user's choice on where their preference would be, right? The ideal thing is to just put it in my documents folder and my company name or my product name. That is the recommended thing, that even the Windows guidelines suggest anyway. So that's why, you don't need to ask. And if there are certain things that are, very runtime specific, probably best if you move that decision to the application itself and not the installer or, not the package format. So let the application make that decision when it's run for the first time. You could possibly do that. So enhanced customization, you have the ability to, specify target platforms, enable streaming so that, you optimize on the execution. It creates a launcher exe for test purposes, which is, typically in the other tools that allow you to create APV packages, to really test it out, you have to properly put it on a machine that has the APV client installed and then register it with the APV client using a special command line, and then you'll be able to test it. What Install Shield provides is it provides a small launcher that automatically enables all that command line, and you can build the APV package and then test it right away. creates an MSI to distribute these virtual packages. So it creates a wrapper MSI. And what the wrapper MSI does is it basically copies the relevant files that are required to the target machine and registers the AppV package with the AppV client on the machine.
Can you use the launcher actually for test purposes without the AppV licensing?
No, I believe you do need the AppV client on your machine. So the AppV client for development purposes, you can obtain it from Microsoft. So if you're, you know, so that is available as a part of the MSDN download. You can install it and try it out. But for your end users to have the AppV client on their machine, they need the MDOP license on the individual machines. So that's the sort of the limitation right now. So we'll jump to a demo. So to build an AppV package, all I'm doing is basically creating a basic MSI project, because what I'm saying is this is a product that will, you know, for the foreseeable future, will ship as an installer. But I'd like the option to create a virtual package from it as well when I need it. So basically, this is an installer that you're creating. You add files. Let's go ahead and add a file here. Create a shortcut for it. And then all you need to do is first, you know, and you can do many of the other things. Obviously, you know, if your focus is on the AppV package, you're not very interested in customizing dialogs because there's no install involved. So the first thing that you'd have to do is build and install, you know, the MSI package. And then we have this assistant here called the AppV assistant. And here's where you specify the information that's specific to the AppV package. So name of the package is My Virtual App. Root folder name is what is when AppV loads a virtual application. What it does is it's a sort of the installer equivalent. It puts a root folder name, and then all the information, all the files related to the AppV package are under that in a virtual directory. So this is a virtual directory, and then you can target different platforms. AppV client, while it is ideal for Windows 7, it does run on Windows XP as well. So you can target, and Windows Vista, so you can basically target any of these and say my AppV package is only targeting certain platforms. You can add additional files to the virtual package that are not in your installer or MSI package. You can create additional shortcuts for virtual packages that need not be there in your installer. Same thing with registry settings. And then dynamic suite composition is a way that you associate dependent products together as individual virtual packages. So let's say if your product created PDF files, but you couldn't view them, and you needed Adobe to be also present on the machine. So what you can do is you can actually browse to the Adobe virtual package and say, this package actually depends on that. So when the packages are shipped out together, the AppV client knows that these two are dependent on each other because that's specified in the parameters, and it actually loads them together in the bubble that it creates. So there's, you know, if somebody says, you know, open a PDF from your application, it automatically launches the Acrobat Reader virtual app. And here in the build settings, you can, all you need to do is select a release and in the advanced, you can specify, generate an installation package. You can also specify whether you want the AppFi application test launcher to be created, and then go ahead and build it. So as you can see, what it did is it actually built both the MSI as well as the AppFi package so that both of them are in sync. We'll go ahead and open the release folder. And you can see the AppFi package here and the the launcher will launch this application. That's the client. I believe the AppFi client was getting loaded. Because what the launcher does is call the AppFi client via command line and says, here's a package, run and load it up. I didn't have the AppFi client running as an agent on my machine. So. Sure, yeah. What will happen is the merge modules will all be included in the AppFi package, and it'll be one big blob that gets loaded. If I include those merge modules in another package, AppFi package, it'll make another copy of that and include it in that AppFi package as well, and that is loaded in a separate bubble. So really, I mean, you can include, you know, as many times as you want. It's just the size of the AppFi package that is just going to get a little larger, but there will not be any conflicts. You know, if there's a new version of merge modules included in one of them and an older version of the other AppFi package, both of them can coexist on that machine and you'll never have any problems. Yeah, so there is a possibility to do that. I just need to figure out where. So what it's that particular thing is not possible now in the IDE. So when you launch an AppFi package, it is launched by a file called an OSD file. An OSD file is somewhat like the a shortcut file, like the LNK file for installed apps, and that is usually on your desktop. And when you run that, it, you know, it launches the application and specified inside the OSD file, there are special events. So you could execute some code, you know, prior to launching the virtual applications. You could execute some code on shutting down the virtual application. So that is the level of customization you have, is to use those events and, you know, execute code every time. But that gets executed every time the application is launched because there's no concept of an install anymore.
Created while the setup is
Right. If you are asking the user for extensive input, then you know, that would need to be abstracted out and have the application itself ask that, not the installer, because there's no installer anymore. You know, transfer the responsibility of that to the app itself. So when the app is initiated, maybe it asks you for a folder where it needs to create its documents, if it is a document generation program. Good. So, you know, just a recap of what we discussed today. So we talked about, you know, agile application development, the fact that teams are globally distributed, iterative development, products are componentized. So if there is a need to collaborate on installation development, use installation units. Consider, you know, and because there is going to be a larger number of developers involved in the creation of installation units, consider using InstallShield concurrent license model, because you don't have to buy an individual copy of InstallShield for every developer. Buy some floating licenses that can be shared with these larger teams. Take advantage of component-based product architecture. This is you know, a good way to build individual component-based products and give your marketing teams, your product management teams, the flexibility to bundle them together and sell as suites, and, you know, use our, you know, suite project and build, you know, suite installers. Not only does it give you the ability to create suite installers, but a key feature of that is also to improve the download size of your installer, because I specified that you could have, you know, different pieces of the installers coming directly from the web. There'll be many times where if a certain condition is met, that is, if a certain component of your setup is already installed on a particular machine, it won't bother downloading that, and then it'll move on to the next step. So that's why you would want to take advantage of the suite installations. Use the InstallShield standalone build to, you know, utilize and do daily builds. Again, even here, try and take advantage of the concurrent licensing model, because if you want to have multiple build machines in a farm doing your installer builds, no reason to buy, you know, individual node lock licenses for each of them. So you could take advantage of the concurrent licensing model. And then prepare for 64-bit Windows and AppV. Those are the new upcoming, you know, actually the 64-bit Windows is a reality, but, you know, it is very possible that AppV, from an ISV perspective, you know, might become a reality soon if, you know, Microsoft is very successful in promoting the AppV client throughout all enterprises. So it becomes a much more common platform that you could, you know, support. Resources, any questions, you can email me. If you haven't already, try InstallShield 2011. Try out the standalone build feature in that, the 64-bit features, AppV support. Look out for the beta, some of the features that I've shown you are included in the InstallShield 2012 beta. It's probably about, you know, a couple of months, 2.5 months away, should be ready. You know, if you're interested in that, shoot me an email, and I'd be happy to get you on the beta program. Questions?
And different customers have different configurations of those modules, and even those configurations might change over time. Is there any way to deal with that issue of
So how are you deploying them today?
Just all together.
All together in one single installer.
But that's growing rapidly.
Okay, I'll repeat this, sorry. They have an environment where there are a number of modules that are being shipped to multiple customers. Each customer probably has a different configuration of the individual modules. Is that correct?
Sure. They have someone in their organization that determines or buys contracts for modules.
Okay. Okay. And how to, I mean, and right now, today what you're doing is you're just building a single MSI, but how are you sending that single installer to multiple customers if there are different configurations required for each?
Currently we use ClickOnce.
Okay. ClickOnce is a pretty, it's not quite feature rich in its capabilities, right?
Right, but it's
Mm-hmm.
Is that those features are there in ClickOnce are very useful. I want to know if my if I have a new update available, and I also want to be able to force my customers to update the software.
Okay. Force your customers to update your software. That can be achieved today. I mean, you can create update setups for your existing product. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the product that we have called FlexNet Connect that allows you to deploy updates to your customers. And there's an agent on the customers on your each and every machine that regularly checks your server for updates. And if there's an update available, it automatically downloads and applies the update. Is that something that you want to do? Force the customers to apply the update, as in like a push mechanism.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that because we have configurations where you have large companies with a very strict policy about how to handle installing of applications.
Okay.
So we have some issues with them about the ClickOnce because they're not too happy with that. Also, the good part is that users don't need administrative rights to install those packages. So
right, that's an advantage.
So I don't know if our customers will be happy to have an agent FlexNet.
Yeah, FlexNet Connect. That is a way to get it. That's a way to get the updates. To your customers quickly. Are your customers in a pretty controlled corporate environment?
Some are. At home, so
okay. So especially for people at home, this is it's a very benign agent. It doesn't, do anything bad to your system. Only when there is an update available, it checks for an update behind the scenes and as a background process. And if there is an update that you've published on the server, it will then go ahead. Sometimes it actually prompts the user to say, hey, there's an update available. Would you like to install it? And in some cases, you can just say silently, apply the update. And in those cases, it just does that. So that is one option. The other option of this multiple configurations is you could use MSI for it, and you could create multiple what are called transforms for different configuration. And at runtime, you can just say, ship this customer, basic MSI plus transform one, and ship customer B the core MSI plus transform B. That is one way to do that, to solve the multiple configuration problem from a deployment perspective. I don't know if you have challenges from a development perspective. If you have challenges from a development perspective, that's where probably the installation units is something that you could look at. I'm not sure if that is your core problem, though. So, okay.
Okay, I understand the idea about transforms.
Mm-hmm.
I also use it with some.
Right.
But I find that for using it with this product, we might have so many modules at a given moment that it would be undoable to have so many transforms available for each and every customer. So we're looking for a dynamic way to solve this.
Right. I mean, the ultimate dynamic way to probably solve it is to build in all those requirements into the core product itself and make it, run during runtime, figure out what to do, what not to do. But, short of that, I can't think of other suggestions outside of transforms that would help you. More questions? Good. Thanks a lot. Yep.